On To The Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
Neither party's agenda really aligns with who its coalition is today.
It was the dumbest speech I have ever seen in my life of covering politics.
When people walk into a voting booth, at the end of the day, they do say, I really should vote for someone smarter than me.
I'm Warren Altney. To The Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To The Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page. Warren Altney back with Which Way LA. The reward has been increased for three murder suspects who escaped yesterday from the Orange County Jail. It's now $50,000 apiece. Tony Saavedra is legal affairs reporter for the Orange County Register. And Tony, good to have you on our program.
Nice to be here.
$50,000 apiece. The Orange County government will pay for that if there is assistance in finding these people.
That's right. It ups the total to $200,000.
So, what about the escape itself? I understand from reading your stories in your paper that the grand jury has been telling them to put cameras on the roof.
Since at least 2008, the various grand juries every year have been telling the sheriff to put more cameras throughout the five-jail Orange County jail system, especially on the roof of the men's jail. And part of the reason could be that since 1968, when the jail was built, 15 inmates have escaped through the roof using ropes, electrical cords, garden hoses, and tied bed sheets to lower themselves to the ground.
So that's what happened with these three people. Just tell our listeners, remind our listeners who they are.
Yeah. The three that that escaped were Hussein Nayeri, Jonathan Tew, and Bak Duong.
And all of them were charged with very serious violent crimes.
Either attempted murder or murder.
And again, of course, if they're telling people that they are very dangerous people to have in circulation. So how did they get to the roof in the first place and manage not to be noticed missing for 16 hours?
Well, that's the key question. The jail does two photo ID searches, body counts, if you will, at the jail, one at 5 in the morning where they actually make the inmate sit up and they match him to a photo. And they do another one at 8 p.m., although this one day it was done at 9 p.m. because of a fight. In between those times, they do these administrative paper checks where they look at the in the dorm, and those that are missing, they try to determine where they're at their various appointments. They could be at chow, they could be in the medical clinic, they could be at court, they could be in any number of places, and they try to determine, you know, if they're where they're supposed to be.
So that's what they're supposed to do. That's supposed to be enough to keep track. Obviously, they didn't keep track if they lost these guys and didn't realize it for 16 hours. Does it appear that there might be an insider involvement here?
That's what folks are saying. I mean, that's the sheriff's department isn't saying, the DA's office isn't saying, but most experts that are being interviewed believe that there's some kind of insider involvement. It seems like there would have to be in order to get the tools involved to cut through 3/4-inch iron bars, steel bars, and that in order to get all the bed sheets and in order to determine how to get to the roof.
Bed sheets that were used to rappel down 4 or 5 floors, which is a big kind of thing to do just in itself. What about the dorm? Why are these kinds of inmates housed in a dorm?
Well, there's not enough cells to put each one of the inmates in a cell, even those that are accused of attempted murder or murder. So they house the ones that show that they can play nice together. They house them in the dorms. Now, one of the factors they look at is what you're accused of, but they also look at what your prior history is in jail. They look at gang affiliations. They look at various things in order to classify whether you can be trusted to be in a dorm. Just because you're accused of a violent crime outside the jail doesn't mean that you can't behave inside the jail to be in a dorm.
How many people in the dorm, and I guess there wouldn't be any expectation that other inmates would call to the guards and say, hey, wait a minute, these guys are escaping.
I believe in this dorm there were about 68, and sleeping in a bunk bed type situation. And you're right, they would have to know that there's something going on. The attorney for one of the escapees told me that his belief is that he actually joined in, he wasn't one of the masterminds, but that he was one of those who saw them leaving and joined in.
So are they thought to have all gone to different places once they got out, or is there any reason to believe they might still be together?
The Sheriff's Department hasn't said. The last thing that they let out was that they believe they were all in Southern California still. We believe that they're one of the places that they're looking and concentrating on is Little Saigon. And that's about all that's come out.
All right. A $10 million plan has now been put in place, as I understand, to overhaul the whole video system, but it's a little too late.
Yes, and in 2015, they started a plan, $10 million plan, $2 million a year to upgrade the video system by 2020.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens once that is installed. Tony Saavedra with the Orange County Register. Good to have you on our program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
In a moment, California's double standard for public protection on Which Way LA.
Visit the Which Way LA blog for an extension of what Los Angeles is made of. News, arts, culture, and the fabric of Southern California, all in one place and updated daily. Check it out now at kcrw.com/whichwayla.
We're not only back with Which Way LA. State regulators waited for months before they responded to the SoCal Gas Company's dangerous leak in the San Fernando Valley. They waited for years till the federal government finally forced closure of the Exide Technologies battery recycling plant near East Los Angeles. Nancy Martinez reports for Eastern Group Publications. They have six bilingual papers, including the East Side Sun. Hi, Nancy. Good to have you with us.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Warren.
You have reported that nobody in East Side Los Angeles has anything against the people out in Porter Ranch, but they do feel there's a double standard at work here. Tell us about it.
Yes, they definitely want to stress there's nothing. It's nothing against the people of Porter Ranch and what's going on there. They just wish they had that same type of swift response, that feeling of urgency that they are seeing every day out in Porter Ranch. So a lot of them are really blaming the governor for not stepping up the way he has over there.
Okay, people in Porter Ranch are saying it took him months to respond to their situation. How long did it take, though, for complaints about the health effects of the Exide battery recycling plant to be heard by the state officials?
Well, really, we're looking at a plant in Vernon that's been operating since the 1920s. It was only in 2003 when Exide, the world's largest producer and distributor of batteries, took over. And it's been years. It wasn't until 2014 that the EPA really put Exide on record for violating federal limits on lead emissions. And it was the U.S. Attorney's Office last year in April when the government finally stepped in to close the plant.
So the plant was there for a very long time. What sort of health effects have been reported?
Well, in 2013, the South Coast Air Quality Management District cited the facility for releasing arsenic into the air. And Exide was ordered to notify 110,000 residents in southeast Los Angeles County for exposure to chemicals and pollutants known to cause cancer.
110,000 people. And what about lead?
Right. There was lead in the backyards of people in their homes, and some people claim in their bodies. People who have died of cancer or who have cancer cite the facility as the polluter.
How much of a cleanup is going to have to be done?
We're looking right now at as many as 10,000 homes that could be contaminated with lead from the acid battery recycler.
And is the recycler, is Exide paying the freight for the cleanup?
Well, they're supposed to. Under this agreement with the U.S. Attorney's Office, they struck a deal where Exide would close permanently and would be required to pay for the cleanup of the facility and the nearby properties. But, you know, a lot of residents feel, you know, we can only hope that will happen.
And how many years has it been since the residents began to complain about the problems caused by the plant?
We're talking about decades, years. So, you know, when looking back at what's going on in Porter Ranch, that have people have been dealing with that for a couple of months. Eastside residents feel they've been dealing with this for years and have yet to receive that same level of attention.
Once again, Nancy Martinez is reporter for the Eastern Group publication. She said a moment ago, as I reported earlier, that the federal government is getting the credit for finally shutting down the Exide plant. Today, an assembly committee is holding a hearing on this very issue. Matt Rodriguez is there. He's the secretary of Cal EPA, which oversees the Department of Toxic Substances Control. And he is pushing back against that narrative that the federal government closed down the plant.
There's been some debate over their claims as to credit for closing down the site. Let us just say that we all arrived at that determination at more or less the same time, but the DTSC had been working on this for quite some time, which is why DTSC was able to come out with an order almost immediately and in conjunction with the U.S. DOJ.
Gloria Molina is a familiar voice on our program, former L.A. County Supervisor on the board for 23 years until just 2 years ago. Good to have you back on our program.
Thank you, Warren.
It appears Matt Rodriguez is challenging the idea that it was the Justice Department of the federal government that ultimately shut down the Exide plant. What do you say to that?
Well, I wish Mr. Rodriguez was a little bit more honest with the rest of the people in the community as well as to your listening audience. The reality is it was this regulatory agency that allowed them for over 30 years to have a temporary permit. They did not monitor them at all. It was their responsibility and their duty. We had to chase around the federal government as well as the state in order to get the attention that we finally did get. And today we still have homes, thousands of homes in throughout that area that have not been inspected, that have not been remediated. Even their information on their website is skewed. There are the lawyers that are working for many of the families out there. Those numbers are not exact. So with all due respect to Mr. Rodriguez, and I don't know how long he's been with the agency, for the years that the community has been meeting and trying to get the attention of the governor, it took the federal government and the county and many of us to pressure them in order to start moving for the responsibility and the duty that they have, and they are poisoning children and residents throughout the Eastside community, and it's shameful.
You say they are poisoning children. What evidence is there for that?
Well, we know that lead does, enter the body, and, of course, it destroys brain cells, and, of course, that is over time is going to be destroying the ability of these children to have, you know, full brain capacity. We don't know all of it. They haven't tested any children. They haven't tested anyone. All they have so far is just tested much of the dirt that is in the in the lawns and throughout the neighborhood. But even then, that testing is still not complete, and the remediation is not done. So we don't know the extent of all of the potential damage up to now because they just haven't carried out their work in a timely fashion. In fact, they don't have a plan in how to carry it out. We would love to see a plan, and we'd like them to stick by it so that the community has some assurances that they're going to get to doing the work that they're supposed to be doing.
How does this compare, in your opinion, to what's happened with regard to Porter Ranch and the gas leak out there?
Well, very frankly, you know, when I started listening about Porter Ranch, I saw the similarities. I'm not, you know, opposed to the fact that they finally did get the attention, but these people were raising a commotion for a long, long time, and it was an odor in the schools, of course, but they have gotten much more attention, and I'm glad that they're paying attention, but this agency is still very lethargic in moving forward and taking care of the toxicity of our air, of companies that should be responsible to the residents. So there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. I still think in Porter Ranch they're not even moving quick enough, as they should be. Certainly they are not moving quick enough with all of us here that are having to deal with the east side with the Vernon Company. They should have been shut down 29 years ago.
Nancy Martinez, back to you with Eastern Group Publications. Governor Brown showed up at Porter Ranch and appeared there before he declared an emergency declaration. Has he or anybody of his stature ever been seen with regard to Vernon?
No, he's never made any type of visit to X-Side or the community affected by this pollution. But yet he was in not too far from the plant back in November for a casino opening. He was there for a red ribbon cutting ceremony, and protesters were there trying to get his attention. And the fact that he hasn't made any type of statement about X-Side.
Gloria Molina, Supervisor Molina, what do you think is responsible for the fact that there does appear to be a double standard here?
Well, I think it's unfortunate. I think that, of course, the people in Porter Ranch have been screaming very loud, as they should be. And I think the media has paid a little bit more attention to them as well, unfortunately. I think, again, it goes to the issue of environmental racism that goes on. And you know, you hate to point the finger and say that, but the reality is, just look at the facts. And the reality is that you have a state government that has not been responsive to their duties for a number of years. And until you scream as loud as you can, you're going to get their attention. So it's really unfortunate. All these people are employed to take care of us, and we're supposed to trust them. And at the end of the day, they let us down.
Dan Hirsch is with us. He's the director of the Program on Environmental and Nuclear Policy at UC Santa Cruz. He's also president of the Committee to Bridge the Gap here in Los Angeles, a nuclear watchdog group. Dan Hirsch, good to have you on our program.
Good to be with you.
With regard to the environmental issues here and the health effects of these two facilities, what's your take on Governor Brown and his history in this area?
Well, I think, first of all, it's clear that there is some imbalance. The governor did visit Porter Ranch. He's not visited the X-Side community. But at the bottom of it, I actually think there's a kind of equal opportunity environmental negligence going on, because the agencies that are supposed to be protecting communities, whether they are low income or not, are completely failing to do their job. The Porter Ranch problem was created in large measure by weak regulation by the Brown administration and its predecessors. Brown actually had fired the head of the Division of Oil and Gas Regulation at the behest of the oil industry, because they were trying to do a little bit of regulation. The same thing is true for X-Side. The toxics agency allowed that facility to operate for years with an expired permit and with numerous violations, releasing lead year after year after year. So there's a fundamental imbalance here, which I think is largely the imbalance between communities that are impacted by these hazardous materials and the industries that are causing the problem. And at the heart of it is what we call regulatory capture. The regulatory agencies have been captured by the industries there to regulate. And so in some sense, communities of all ethnic backgrounds and incomes have been placed at risk by the power that the polluter has over the regulator, and how little of what the regulator does is actually designed to protect people as opposed to protecting those companies.
Governor Brown has been very forceful, traveled the world with regard to climate change, and tried to get new regulations in California to limit the emission of greenhouse gases.
And look at the irony. While Governor Brown was in Paris for the climate change conference, touting all that California had done, the Porter Ranch oil leak, a gas leak was adding the equivalent of 25% of all of the methane produced by the entire state. And that was due, as I say, in part to his lax regulation and his intervention with the regulatory agency to get rid of the regulators who are trying to do a better job. Jerry Brown has been fairly good on climate change. He has been really quite poor on issues related to toxics. There's a scandal, frankly, at the heart of the Department of Toxic Substances Control, and the governor has done essentially nothing to try to fix that. So there's a mix here. On climate change, he's not bad. On many other environmental matters, he's been AWOL.
But back to supervisor, former supervisor Molina, you can't blame it all on Governor Brown if the Department of Toxic Substances Control has been negligent and hasn't showed up in Vernon to deal with the Exide plant for decades.
Well, that's true. You can't blame him exclusively, but he did have a duty and a responsibility. I tried calling him. I tried to set up a meeting with him. Many of us have been begging him along the way. He has not responded at all. So, you know, there's a point in time where you can't blame him for everything, but he could have stepped in. He had a duty and a responsibility, and regrettably, he didn't do that. And it's interesting, when he needed my endorsement, he just bebopped into my office and wanted an appointment to talk to me. But that's what he wanted then, and of course, turning around and not paying attention to the community is very disgraceful, and it's very unfortunate because we've all appreciated his environmental work in the past. But these two instances are something that's going to be a shameful part of his environmental record, regrettably.
When he came bopping around, did you endorse him?
I did endorse him, and we talked about all the wonderful things that he could do and the kind of changes he could bring about and the aggressive nature of many of those things. And we did talk about environmental injustice because we had many issues at that time. But regrettably, on this one, he really did let us down.
Dan Hirsch, back to you. You said there's a scandal at the DTSC, the Department of Toxic Substances Control, that the governor hasn't dealt with. What is it?
It essentially has been failing to enforce the toxic rules that it is set up to enforce. And so there have been a number of studies indicating deep-rooted problems at the department. You may have heard just recently about these racist emails that have been uncovered, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. Essentially, site after site, not just Exide, but dozens and dozens around the state, have ended up with substantial contamination causing risks to the community, and with the administration not only failing to stop it, but oftentimes taking actions that have contributed to it. It's essentially the classic captured regulatory agency, where if you are a polluter and can hire a former head of one of these regulatory agencies to lobby for you or a former aide to the governor, you can get a free pass. But if you're a poor community or even a regular community, you just can't hire that kind of a lobbyist. And you end up with releases of toxic materials that put your children at risk.
Gloria Molina, back to you. Once again, we've heard, of course, that the SoCal Gas is paying for the people in Porter Ranch to move out of their houses and temporarily relocate someplace else. Today at the hearing where we heard Matt Rodriguez, Barbara Lee, who's head of the DTSC, testified that they are inspecting homes. They have inspected hundreds of them so far near the Exide plant. Do you think that Exide will have to move the people who have been exposed or try to clean up the yards that are now full of lead contamination and other such threats?
Well, first of all, they haven't gone in there and completed all their inspections. They haven't developed a plan for remediation so that they could inform the community. And they certainly haven't talked to them about relocation benefits. In fact, we don't have anyone that can attend the meetings, and the community meets every single week, and they haven't been available to even answer questions. So the reality is they have a long way to go in order to begin to hold anyone accountable. We don't know if there's money to do any of this, but the community is going to have to probably be more forceful than it has been in the past in order to make this happen. So they claim they're doing things, but you wouldn't know it by the meetings that we've been having in the community where we ask them to come to explain what's going on, to give us the counts, to tell us which homes have been inspected. That has not been done. There's been some remediation, and they send out press releases about it all the time, and they put it on their website. But in the community, dreadfully, we're watching every single day that many of these communities have been hurt. The City of Commerce now is also claiming that there are many homes in their area that have been part of receiving these contaminants. We don't know. They haven't completed their, and they can't attest to really being attentive to the east side and the whole X side issue. They just can't do that. And it's certainly something that we cannot trust because they haven't really moved forward in any aggressive. They just would give us a plan and let us know what they're doing next week, next month, 6 months from now, how many homes they're going to do. This is the kind of respect that this community deserves that it has not gotten.
Nancy Martinez, very quickly, we're almost out of time. Have you seen a sense of hopelessness about this in the community? Or finally, since Exide was shut down, is there a sense that maybe things will go forward?
No, people are definitely frustrated. There's a level of anger from Eastside residents who just see the strikingly different response between Porter Ranch and Exide. Schools have been closed, people have been relocated in Porter Ranch, and yet in the poor Latino-dominant communities affected by Exide, you know, kids are being told not to play in their own backyards. Schools continue to go on, and nothing has really moved forward from.
Okay. All right, that's all the time we have. Nancy Martinez again with Eastern Group Publications, Gloria Molina, former L.A. County Supervisor Dan Hirsch, Director of the Program on Environmental and Nuclear Policy at UC Santa Cruz. Thanks to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Warren. We're going to miss you.
Yes.
You will indeed.
Once again, Which Way LA will be ending its 23-year run on Thursday, but I'll still be hosting To the Point on KCRW.